So how do you incite innovative culture? So there are no formula or potion for inciting an innovation culture in an organization. Various studies have proved that some common characteristics in innovative cultures work, actually. So there are some examples which have been shared here, okay, so which has been working well in different organizations. First is your structural variable. Second is your cultural characteristics. Third is human resource features. Organizations seeking to innovate should consider instituting these characteristics into their organization. So either of these, the organizations can consider to administer. Now, first is to understand what is innovation. We have already covered innovation in detail in the last chapter. According to Merriam-Webster, dictionary innovation is the act or process of introducing new ideas, new devices, or new methods. Okay, so this has been the definition as explained by Merriam-Webster. Change is referred to making things different, and therefore innovation can be said to be to a more specialized change where a new idea is applied to introducing or improving a product, process, or service. So, example here would be that even if you make a change, small change, your employees were completely handicapped when it came to working in a remote condition. For example, if at all somebody is unwell or somebody has just, I'm not talking about post-pandemic era, I'm talking about pre-pandemic era. So at that point in time, let's say the employees were not equipped enough to even be available on, at work remotely, right? But for them, if I have to say that the employees have gone through innovation, if they're able to now work remote, not only work remotely, but also able to touch base with the customers and actually generate leads, is actually innovation, isn't it? Don't you think so? So if you're able to even make that small minor change, it's actually innovation. So innovation does not have to be completely a breakthrough one. It does not have to be a transformational one. It can be as small as just moving a needle from one place to the other. From a complete desk job to be able to generate lead from home on call or on a Zoom meeting. That's innovation. So, thus it can be said that all innovations are change, but not all change are innovation. So, but all innovations definitely will incorporate some or the other changes. Innovations can range from small incremental improvements, as I gave you. Working remotely itself is an innovation, but to be able to generate lead is a complete breakthrough, right? Incremental improvement to radical breakthrough. Yeah, so it's the extent of the change. The first characteristic of innovative culture, structural variable. The structure. Innovation relationship is characterized as organic structures always have a positive impact and encourages innovation as there is very, very low differentiation, formalization and greater decentralization. So you have the autonomy of moving, of being flexible in that role to be able to, because you're in a decentralized atmosphere, so you're not being observed from the top. So hence you have better ability to create an impact, and actually organizations can encourage more innovation from this kind of a matrix. So the structure innovation relationship is also about long and stable career within the organization. So if you have a long and stable career within the organization, it gives the authority, knowledge about ways and means of completing tasks and procuring desired results. Now, you know that when you're seasoned in the organization, when you have worked for 5, 6, 7 years in the organization, and you know the who's and who of the organization, who can do what, where, if you get stuck, where is it that you go to? So you have all these nuances available to you, right? So that's when you're able to work better. So that's where, so a long and stable career in the organization always gives you an authority as well as the knowledge of completing tasks and to be able to get the desired results. So the so innovation relationship is also characterized in the communication across the work units. Okay, so communication across the work unit will tends to be high in innovative organization. Okay, so there will be regular meetings, there will be regular communication channels working, there will be regular calls as they use committees. There will be, you know, so innovative organizations will always have different committees. Like, for example, I remember in the past when I was working, I was part of a steering committee. So it's called as steering committee. It is called as managing committee. You know, so there are different committees which are being created to be able to. These are not formal committees. Okay, these are not formal designations which work. This is just group of people. Basically, they are change agents who work together to bring into that. So that outcome has been levied in front of the designation in the group. So that's how it's called as steering committee. Means they are the ones who are the driving forces. Okay, task forces, common functional teams, etc. So these are some of the, so hence the communication across work unit will be very high in an innovative organization. So innovation now, how do you, now another way of inciting innovation culture here is that I would like to give the example of innovation during the pandemic. So the COVID-19 pandemic has dramatically altered the way we live, isn't it? Whether it it comes to your work, whether it comes to your personal lives, whether it comes to your shopping, whether it comes to your food ordering, whether it comes to your domestic help, everything has changed dramatically and drastically. So while many aspects will prove temporary, some of them are temporary, while we are on the way of getting vaccinated, slowly and steadily our domestic helps, your housewives, your cooks and things like that will start having in place, right? But it is temporary in nature as of now. But there can be no doubt that we will find our world has changed in fundamental ways once the threat recedes. Like for example, during the pandemic time when the maids and house helps were completely stopped from entering your premises, you know, so we divided our work. Me and my husband divided our work between us because we both had our own work also to, you know, professional lives as well. So what we used to do is, and my son was in the 12th at that time, he was in the peak of studies, so I couldn't give too much of responsibilities to him. So what we did is, so all the household work, all the, cleaning, mopping, dusting, all of those things had to be done by was taken as the responsibility by my husband. And anything to do with the kitchen, anything to do with the cooking, anything to do with the child's studies, all of that was taken on my shoulders. Okay, so we divided those work very, very explicitly. And over a period of time, we got so used to it that though it was temporary in the initial stages, we actually realized that we don't need a kitchen help now. Now, while our domestic help has come back to work, she has, the cleaning maid has come into place and we have started calling her since last 2 months now. But for the kitchen, I have completely said no. Because of the, safety as a precaution of safety, because it's everything to do with hands and everything. So hence, we decided not to keep a cook and we are able to manage it. And I'm telling you, I have not faced any problem now. I am quite equipped with it now. So in spite of the fact that it was initially temporary, okay, but now the lives have actually changed. Now the employment of this cook has completely gone for a toss. She called me 3-4 times to check, can she come and resume work? I said, no, I will not require anybody now because of the fact that first is the health consideration. Second is your financial consideration. All kinds of things put together have put a stop to her need. Now, that's the new normal. Now, I'm equipped to be able to cook. So if I'm absent, my husband is also able to do it. So hence, even in spite of the fact that it was temporary in the beginning, it now has become it has changed the fundamental ways of our life. So innovation, another innovations during pandemic was supply capabilities are being pushed. So corporations are laser focused and acting so fast because the people who are doing business differently have actually started delivering it at the pace of the customer consumer needs. So hence it has become very, very competitive now. So organizations have to really work to push the, have to really, really laser focus to push the delivery mechanisms, the supply mechanisms. So side issues are deprioritized, say, you know, enabling companies to suddenly function far more efficiently as bureaucracy is completely been eliminated. Your kickbacks, your, you know, different kinds of one table to the other, escalation from one table to the one person to the other, all these have been eliminated, don't you think so? Because people have started, have you seen, even regulatory bodies, the government has started working so much faster compared to earlier. Yes, things are expensive, things are, you know, way beyond human capacity nowadays. But then if you see, the processes are also working much more faster than earlier. Earlier, government offices, one document in the government, you had to you know, you have to wait so many months to get it. Now I got my child, my son just turned 18 in this month. So within 3 days, I got the PAN card in my hand. I applied it online, got it delivered at home in 3 days time. So regulatory bodies have also kind of become very, very encouraging. So governments are intervening through laws, regulations, and they are supporting the programs that prioritize the crisis response. If there is a crisis, you know, the people who were in who had morbidity issues, who had health issues, were prioritized in the, who were aged beyond 45, all were given the first preference to get vaccinated, regardless of the money or not having the money, right? So these are some of the government initiatives which have happened, which are very, very innovative in nature. So these are largely accepted by everybody as the overall benefit to society is placed before individual considerations. So in spite of the ranks and positions in the society, you are not being given any priority over the needed people. So need was given the prioritization over the wealth. So most organizations that are innovative have similarity in their cultural practices. The common practices that include incitement of experimentation is rewarding both the success and the failure. Otherwise, who is going to take chance of being failed in the organization and take a flak on his or her own appraisal process? No one, right? So the organization has to be the culturally acceptable to failures, and they should be able to enjoy both success and failures equally, because they have to give them chance to fail. Only then they will be able to succeed, isn't it? So in organizations where reward is given for not failing and not for succeeding, risk-taking and innovation are curbed as individuals will only recommend and attempt new ideas when they believe such negative results of this will not be reprimanded. The moment the employees understand that my failure will not be reprimanded and I will be given due respect for my failure as well, we'll see a lot of people coming and taking the ownership of bringing in their own ideas, experimenting on it, going ahead and failing it and learning from that experience. Some of the human resource features while inciting innovative culture. In innovative organizations, employee learning and development holds a very, very high significance in order to keep employees updated with the latest skills and knowledge. So the world is undergoing rapid changes, and if we do not keep up with the relevant pace and we just outdate our skills and knowledge, we will not be able to succeed in an organization. Hence, human resource have to kind of take off onus of upgrading the skills of the employees every now and then. So human resource features also creates change champions, which have been commonly the common personality traits involved here are the change champions should reflect high self-confidence. They should be persistent enough. They should be able to be pushy. They should be able to get going. The third is high energy levels and high risk appetite. They should not have the fear of failure. They should not be able to always ask questions before taking a risk. They have to have high risk appetite. They should be able to inspire and energize others. Their energy should be like a virus, that the moment you have your energy down, the moment you're around, it should be influencing others around you. And they should have the ability to gain commitment of others. They should be able to regain the trust and confidence from others so that they get a complete commitment from them. So these are some of the common personality traits that are expected from a change champion. Encouraging continuous growth culture within the organization is a proactive way of managing change. So continuous growth culture, if you say that, okay, we are at the stabilizing stage now, we are going to, let's see, wait for the market to take, you know, shape up and then take decisions, then you will see employees getting demotivated. The high performers, the high potential employees will always have feel stagnated if there is no growth culture within the organization. Okay, so this way the organization becomes a learning organization as well. So how do we define learning organization? A learning organization is one that can adapt to the changes that the external environment is exposing you to through a continuous renewal of its structures and practices. Harold Kools defines this learning organization as this, that a learning organization is such organization that can adapt to the changes that are subjected to the environment time and again through a continuous renewal of its structures and practices. So the structures and practices have to be so fluid in nature that they can change anytime to be able to adapt to the market changes, the dynamics that are being exposed to in the external factors. Now, how do we build learning organizations? So organizational learning can be single loop learning, or it can be also double loop learning. So what is a single loop learning? Single loop learning involves detecting mistakes and correcting them. So you identify what are the mistakes done and you give them corrective actions. Second, the correcting methods here based on past routines and existing policies. You are not administrating another survey or another assessment to rule out any kind of mistakes or mistakes here. So what you do is you completely based on whatever has worked for you in the past routines, you take those into consideration along with the existing policies. What is double loop learning? Involves, again, correcting mistakes by evolving the goals, policies, and setting routines. So double loop learning tends to question the deep-rooted assumptions and the norms while providing scope for innovative solutions to issues with drastic improvement levels. Okay, so that's what double loop learning tends to question. It questions the deeply rooted assumptions that we have in our minds, saying how do we provide scope for innovative solutions? So what are some of the characteristics of a learning organization? So a learning organization will always be characterized in many ways. So these are some of the features of a learning organization. Shifting from the older thinking process to the new ones. That's obvious, isn't it? If we continue to live in the old processes and practices, we will tend to remain in the same position. We will not be able to move pace. Second is fostering openness and strong communication among each other. Okay, so you have to inculcate the habit of sharing and being openness. As we mentioned earlier also, that do not avoid, rather discuss, confront. Okay, build a strong understanding of the organization's operations. So if at all there is an unclarity of goals, unclarity of ambiguity around the organization's operations, please get that clarity. So please get that clarified through learning initiatives. Create commonly agreed and widely shared strategic plan and sense of purpose. Keep doing this. So these are some of the initiatives that you can have. Like for example, in one of the organizations that I worked earlier, we used to call them as values pe charcha. Okay, so you keep revisiting the values every now and then, bring it to light. then and then if the manager sees that the one of the subordinate has really displayed a value behavior very well, what he will do is he will issue a value check to them, saying that, you know, this is the value that you have lived by in this instances. So if they feel very good about it. Okay, so this brings in a completely strategic plans comes alive. Okay, your values comes alive. Encourage coordination and collaboration to work towards the common purpose. Okay, so encourage that, you know, a collaboration will take time. It is not easy. It is fine. You have to coordinate. You have to collaborate to work towards the common purpose. Ultimately, all of us are working together. If at all one department is not collaborating or not giving the required support that they are supposed to give, it's okay. Rest of the others are doing it, no? So it will take time. It's okay. So you have to give that confidence to the employees, to the employees of the organization, that it's okay, it may take time, but that's fine. Learning organization provides solutions to three fundamental issues of the traditional organization. So first is the fragmentation. Second is your rivalry. And the third is the effectability. Okay, so what is fragmentation? So bifurcation on the basis of specialization results in boundaries, isolating different functions into independent units. Okay, so basis the specialties that the person has, the specialists are being bifurcated as per their functions. Okay, and that may lead into sometimes these they are being converted into independent units, and there are majority of the times in conflict with each other. Okay, some of the examples could be operations and sales. Okay, these are two departments which always have got confrontation. They always have conflict among each other, because the sales executive will say that, you know, I have bought 5 leads, with a lot of efforts I have closed deals and I have brought these leads, but the operation is finding, the underwriting is not passing it. So hence, I'm facing a problem in converting this sale. Okay, so hence these are the two bifurcations on the basis of specialization, which can result in isolating different departments as well. So there's a rivalry. A healthy level of rivalry is fine. You know, a competition amongst two departments is fine, which is healthy enough. But if there is excessive, then it hampers the collaboration. Then they will make sure that one department is not collaborating with each other for the fact that they're rivals. Third is your affectability. Now, what is affectability? Affectability is tends the management towards problem solving approach rather than the creativity and innovation. So if the organization, so it depends on the effective on the organization's the way the organization is structured. Okay, the affectability will always enable the management towards either you want to take care of the problem that you are undergoing, or the take care of the crisis that is happening around in your ecosystem, or do you want to really work on let the ecosystem be like that, it can work, you know, it let it be, rather just work on creativity, let's work on breakthrough ideas, all of that. Okay, very few organizations work like that. Most organizations, what they will do is they will leave everything. They will say, okay, forget innovation, forget breakthrough ideas. Let's go and solve this problem. Right now, this is not functioning well. This is a demand which has come from the customer, and we can see a new business. So we will focus on that. So the innovation and your creativity will go out of the window. There are numerous ways by which organizations are made into learning organizations. So there are few are listed below. Okay, so we have already discussed that how do we build a learning strategy? Okay, so management needs to look at learning from a long-term perspective. Learning is very intrinsic oriented department. Okay, and nobody is watching while you learn. If you say that I have learned for 5 hours, who is going to monitor that? In the organization, you might just say that, okay, I was working from home. What did you do? So you say that, you know, I have done a training of 3 hours on Udemy. I've completed this particular course. Nobody is watching you, right? How will you get assessed on? Only when, let's say, you have said that, you know, I have done a training program on agility. Now, when there are some projects that requires your agile skills to be incorporated or to be used in the project, and you're not able to, that's when your learning will come into question, right? That you have already learned this. How come you're not able to? You'll have some ideas around that, right? So that's when. So it management needs to look at learning from a very, very long-term perspective. It cannot happen today and now, okay? And be committed towards the strategic orientation. Reconstructing organization structure, a rigid, inflexible mechanistic structure may be a deterrent to learning. Instead, build a flexible structure that is flatter, least departmentalized, not very formalized, with greater number of cross-functional teams will foster learning since it supports interdependence and shrinks the borderlines. So a rigid, inflexible mechanistic structure could be a restriction or could be an obstacle towards learning. Okay, so hence we need to build a flexible structure that is more flatter, least departmentalized, least formalized, with more number of cross-functional teams. This will foster learning because it supports interdependence and shrinks the borderlines because it's more flatter in nature. It does not have too many branches. So listed below are some of the key suggestions for building successful learning organizations. So what are those? Transforming organizational culture. Culture necessarily has a common shared understanding of what is right and what is wrong within the organization, isn't it? We have already done this earlier in the culture chapter. So culture will always have a shared understanding. They're taking chances and mistakes facilitate learning. The key lies in the fact that failures lead to learning for improvement. So this is a very important point that you have to remember. The key here is that to transform any organizational culture, the key here is that failures actually lead to learning for improvement. So if you haven't failed, you haven't learned as well. So it's the saying goes like that if you have failed, you sure to have learned it the hard way. You probably have failed it and then learned it, but you definitely have learned it. But if you do not fail and you do not move anywhere and you just be there where you were, it's not making any sense, right? Because you're not even unfolding unfolding your potential. Here you understood your potential. Okay, you have failed twice, but third time you were successful. Among the many consequences of organizational change is stress amongst its people. Stress is defined by Robbins as an unpleasant psychological process that occurs in response to environmental pressure. The environment is such that it is leading you to, is putting you under pressure, and you would be able to, and a desirable change which is happening. So it could now be psychological, it could be physical. It may, damage your thought process. It could be any unpleasant psychological process, right? It is imperative to understand the consequences of stress and various methods of managing stress. If you do not know what is stress and how to manage and how to cope up with stress, it is very, very difficult. Please understand what the consequences. So here it is very, very important that to understand what kind of consequences can happen while you undergo stress. So some of the consequences of stress are physiological symptoms which we have discussed just now. It can be connected with various symptoms of poor health issues, you know, increased heart rate, change in the metabolism, headaches, migraines, nausea. All of these are your physiological symptoms. The second one is your, which is not seen, but which is can be only felt to some extent, which may not be even felt. Psychological symptoms, which are difficult to identify, okay? And you do not know what is happening. You would just isolate yourself. You would just be disengaged. People are talking. You're on a table of 10 people and people are discussing their regular jobs and all of those things. But you're just not part of it. Your mind is somewhere else. You don't know where, okay? So it could be one of the stressors that is working against you. The third is the behavioral symptoms. So various studies have consistently shown the behavior stress relationship being consistent. Okay. Sometimes some behavioral symptoms could be, you know, you end up, you know, interrupting people while the person is speaking. You might say something, but you actually do not comply with your behavior. Your body language says something else. You may not have eye contact. Those are some of the behavioral symptoms that you go through. Stress and the job performance now. So what do you understand by stress, and how is job performance related to it? So as mentioned already earlier, not all levels of stress may be undesirable. There is a, there are two types of stresses. One is a eustress and one is a de-stress. So at the eustress is a stress which can actually lead you to perform better under the pressure, because it's leading you to deliver better results. Right? Because you're taking it to your stride, you're taking it as a challenge, you are a person who wants to conquer those challenges, and hence you end up having, you achieve more. Distress. If you do not handle that pressure on time, it builds onto you, it overburdens you, it overwhelms you, and finally it gets onto either of the symptoms. It could lead into high levels of stress. Could be psychological stress, could be a symptom of physiological stress. It could be any of such things. Okay, so there are, so eustress, which is a good stress, distress, which is a bad stress. So eustress is, distress is basically a break point where stress starts having undesirable consequences in the form of any of the forms, psychological or physiological or behavioral. Hence, completely managing change, this stress performance relationship must be kept in mind. So while you are managing change, your stress performance relationship must not be neglected at all. Stress management, there will be no clear understanding of what is an acceptable level of stress and what is discrepancies in views of management. The stress, so managing stress are the different ways and techniques of overcoming your stress related situations that you come through. Stress cannot completely go away. It is just like the part of it. So it's like, just like how you have you know, anything like, let's say, your diabetes, you know, it's not something that can completely go away. Stress is again something which can be only managed. Okay, but through proper management, it can be brought, completely handled or reduced or even eliminate in undesirable consequences. Okay, but if you do not manage it well, and you are subjected to different kind of an atmosphere, you will definitely go through that kind of a change. You will go through a stress. Okay, so hence it needs to be eliminated and taken care at the appropriate time. Stress is managed both at the individual and the organizational level. Okay, so how do you manage it at the individual level? So individuals will have to take personal responsibility for managing stress. The different methods that are used for managing stress at the individual level is the, you know, physical exercises, your yoga practices, relaxation techniques, breathing techniques, managing your time well, social support, reaching out to people when you are at stress. There are a lot of support groups which reaches out to you. Coaching helps. These are some of the you know, initiatives, management techniques that helps in your individual level. Some stress management techniques at organizational levels would be effective selection and job fitment. So in the beginning only, if you do the selection well, if the right person is hired for the right job at the right time, obviously the it's ought to be lesser stress. Realistic goal setting. Goal setting should not be you know, completely in the air. It has to be very realistic and from the ground. Job redesign. If at all the job is calling for some uncertainties in the people and definitely triggers the stressors, you definitely have to work on the redesign. Okay, so you can work on the redesigning the job. Training. If at all the person is finding difficulty in accomplishing a certain task due to the lack of knowledge, skill of attitude, send the person to the for the respective training. Increase employee participation. Involve employees as much as possible. Better communication. Do keep communicating to them off and on in regular intervals. If at all there's a change is happening, the company is undergoing downsizing, so hence all the employees are stressed out, you need to keep communicating them time and again. Employee sabbaticals, wellness programs, send them sabbaticals if at all the person is undergoing, has a child, small child to take care of, has her father, who is again an ailing patient. You know, I have to manage the work as well. So it becomes very difficult. So adopt, inculcate some practices of, sending that person for sabbatical for a while and giving them a confidence, saying that you can take a sabbatical for a month or two, handle your personal issues and come back. Nobody will take your job away. So what you do in the interim, you can either allocate somebody or depute somebody internally, or you can hire somebody from on a freelance basis and let the person complete those tasks. That's also one of the way of looking at it. Or else send for a wellness program. Thank you so much, everybody.